Hi, this is Bernie Wides, back on the air at the Heritage Radio Network, coming from beautiful downtown Bushwick, where this morning it's freezing, and I feel like I'm broadcasting from Alaska here, because the studio is also freezing. Somebody forgot to turn on the heat this morning, so I'm sitting here with my gloves on, and my hat, and my mittens, and all that stuff. But we'll carry on, and I'm going to talk about an animal that lives in the deserts of Africa. So this critter lives where it's always warm. But when I tell you about this critter, I don't think you'd like want to change places with it, even though it lives in this warm African environment. It's called the naked mole rat. And if there was one creature that, you know, some people say only a mother could love this critter, well, if you want to see a picture of a naked mole rat, during our break, go to the photo gallery and take a look at a picture of the mole rat. And you'll see why I said that. So our sponsor today is a new sponsor for me. It's Salumi Artisanal Cured Meats. And they're a brand new sponsor, so welcome to the network. So we're going to talk about the naked mole rat, also known as the sand puppy or desert mole rat. It is a burrowing rodent native to parts of East Africa, and the only species currently classified in its genus. It is one of only two known eusocial mammals, and I'll tell you what eusocial means in a little while. The other one being the Damaraland mole rat, which is closely related to it, and has a highly unusual set of physical traits that enables it to thrive in a harsh underground environment, including lack of pain sensation in its skin, and a very low metabolism. You know, the metabolism is the rate at which you use energy. So some animals, like hummingbirds, have a very, very high metabolism because they use up their energy very fast. But the mole rat's metabolism is normally very low. So the description of this mole rat, well, I'll try to describe it to you, but you should take a look at the picture because, you know, sometimes one picture is really worth 1,000 words. So typical individuals are 3 to 4 inches long. They're really tiny. They're, you know, even smaller than mice. And it weighs about 1 ounce to 1.2 ounces. And the mole rat, it's called it eusocial because they have a lifestyle similar to bees and termites and other insects. But they are mammals. So they have a queen. And the queens are larger and may well weigh about 1.8 ounces. The largest reaching may be 2.8 ounces. That's unusual. They are well adapted to their underground existence. Their eyes are quite small because they really don't need their eyes very much. And their visual acuity is very poor. That means they have very poor eyesight. They probably could use glasses, but they wouldn't work too well underground. Their legs are thin and short, however. However, they are highly adept at moving underground and can move backward as fast as they can moving forward. Their large protruding teeth are used to dig, and their lips are sealed just behind the teeth to prevent soil from filling their mouths while digging. So when you see this picture of this mole rat, the teeth are really sticking out like a beaver's teeth, except they can close their mouth and the teeth are still outside of their mouth. So it's almost like horns, okay, and they use it for digging. They have a little hair, hence the common name, naked mole rat. You know, one of the parameters to be a mammal is to have hair, and they have a very little hair. And they have wrinkled pink or yellower skin. The naked mole rat is well adapted for the limited availability of oxygen within the tunnels that are its habitat. Its lungs are very small, and its blood has a very strong affinity for oxygen, increasing the efficiency of oxygen uptake. You know, we get oxygen through breathing through our lungs, and we have red blood cells that absorb the oxygen as we inhale it through the little tiny capillaries in the lung. Our blood circulates right next to the capillaries are right in the lungs, and we absorb oxygen that way. And the mole rat does it the same way, except that he's much more efficient than we are at absorbing oxygen from the air. Okay, it has a very low respiration and metabolic rate for a mammal, even of its size. It's very small, about two-thirds the size of a mouse. Thus, it uses a minimal amount of oxygen. In long periods of hunger, such as drought, its metabolic rate can be reduced up to 25%. We can't really do that, change our metabolic rate, except maybe in an abnormal conditions. The skin of the naked mole rat lacks a key neurotransmitter called substance P that is responsible in mammals for sending pain signals to the central nervous system. When naked mole rats are exposed to acid or capsaicin, you know, capsaicin is the stuff in hot peppers that makes it hot, they feel no pain. When injected with substance P, however, the pain signaling works as it does in other mammals, but only with capsaicin and not with the acids. This is proposed to be an adaptation to the animal living in high levels of carbon dioxide due to poor ventilated living spaces, which would cause acid buildup in their blood. You know, carbon dioxide is an acid-producing substance, and when it mixes with moisture in the air, sometimes it could form carbonic acid, like acid rain, something similar to that. So remember, this animal feels no pain normally. So that's kind of a strange thing. I mean, you might say that it sounds good for us to have something like that, but it isn't. If you stuck your finger on a match, you burnt it on a match, you wouldn't feel the pain, and that would be pretty terrible. So let's talk about its ecology and behavior. Its distribution and habitats. The naked mole rat is a native to the drier parts of the tropical grasslands of East Africa, predominantly southern Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. Clusters averaging 75 to 80 individuals live together in a complex system of burrows in arid African deserts. The tunnel system built by naked mole rats can stretch up to 2 or 3 miles in cumulative length. That doesn't mean they have one long tunnel that goes for 2 or 3 miles. It means they have a series of tunnels. You know, you could compare it to the subway system underground, like one of the major stations, like Times Square, or I guess even Grand Central Station that has a series of tunnels underground for all the different trains. So that's what they mean by it could stretch 2 or 3 miles underground. So their social structure and reproduction, we'll talk about that now. The naked mole rat is one of the two species of mammals that exhibit eusociability. And they have a complex social structure in which only one female, the queen, and 1 to 3 males reproduce, while the rest of the members of the colony function as workers. As in certain bee species, the workers are divided along a continuum of different worker caste behaviors instead of discrete groups. Okay, that means that there's not discrete lines. The workers probably fulfill a lot of jobs, but they don't copulate with the queen. There are only 2 or 3 that do. Just like in bees, you know, the queen bee, she copulates with a lot of the worker bees, but they are sterile, so they can't help with the offspring. So some function primarily as tunnelers, expanding the large network of tunnels within the burrow system, and some primarily as soldiers, protecting the group from outside predators. Colonies range in size from 20 to 300 individuals. So we're going to stop for a second, more than a second, minute, and take a break. So, and then we'll come back and talk some more about this interesting but pretty ugly creature, the naked mole rat. Hi, this is Bernie Wides back on the air. And remember, our sponsor is a new sponsor. Let me get this name exactly right. Salumi Artesian Cured Meat. I think the word salumi means something like, in America, would be like a deli where they sell all kinds of cured meats, but I'm not quite sure. I'll have to ask Jack because he has relatives from Italy. Maybe he'll know about that. So we're back to talking about the naked mole rat. And the naked mole rat would not be very comfortable in the studio with me here today because he would freeze to death. Luckily, I have better control over my temperature, but that's another story. Okay, so he lives in, I said, in Africa. And the social structure similar to that found in ants, termites, and some bees and wasps is very rare among mammals. The Damaraland mole rat is the only other eusocial mammal currently known. And Damaraland is in northern Namibia. When I was in Africa, we went to Damaraland because it's a great place. It's a desert climate, absolutely beautiful. And there are many petroglyphs in this area. And we went up to see the petroglyphs. It was quite a sight. The relationship between the queen and the breeding males may last for many years. A behavior called reproductive suppression is believed to be the reason why the other females do not reproduce, meaning that the infertility in working females is only temporary and not genetic. Queens live from about 13 to 18 years and are extremely hostile to other females behaving like queens or producing hormones for becoming queens. They have to produce this hormone to make them fertile, but the queen is so threatening that she prevents them from doing it. Okay, when the queen dies, another female takes her place, and sometimes after a violent struggle with her competitors. So there's a fight. There's a fight to see who will be the next queen in this society. Okay, males and females are able to breed at 1 year of age. Gestation is about 70 days. Gestation is the time that it takes the fetus to develop in the uterus. So human fetuses, like us folks, it takes about 9 months. But these mole rats, it takes about 70 days. A litter typically ranges from 3 to 12 pups, but may be as large as 28. The average litter size is 11. In the wild, naked mole rats usually breed once a year. If the litter survives, then they usually will not have another litter for quite a while. In captivity, they breed all year long and can produce a litter every 80 days. The young are born blind and weigh about 0.071 of an ounce. If we use the metric system, it's easier. They weigh about 2 grams. The queen nurses them for the first month, after which the other members of the colony feed them. Now, listen to what they eat. Feces, until they are old enough to eat solid food. So when we use that expression, she's a shit-eating person. Well, the mole rats' babies really do live like that until they're old enough for solid food. And you may know from experience or just general knowledge that feces usually contain some food that could still be used. If you ever notice when a horse defecates or a cow, and then immediately there'll be birds that'll go over to the feces and pick out the seeds and stuff that were not digested by the cow. So it's not that unusual. The naked mole rat feeds primarily on very large tubers, weighing as much as 1,000 times the body weight of a typical mole rat. Tubers are roots underground from many plants, and the roots swell up just like sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes would be a tuber, and they grow underground so that they find these tubers deep underground through their mining operations, but also eat their own feces in an emergency. And if you want a fancy word that means shit eating, it's coprophagia. And copro means feces, and phagia means, you know, eating or liking it. A single tuber can provide a colony with a long-term source of food lasting 4 months, for months or even years, as they eat the inside but leave the outside of the tuber, allowing the tuber to regenerate. So that's really good, because they'll eat the tuber And they don't eat the whole thing because they leave the outside of it to regenerate. So they have a continual source of food. Symbiotic bacteria in their intestines help them to digest the fibers in this tuber because, you know, they're not cooking it. If we get a sweet potato, and you wouldn't want to eat it raw, it's pretty tough in fibers. But if we cook it, the cooking breaks down the proteins and the fibers. So that makes it easy for us to eat. So they have to have these symbiotic bacteria in their intestines. We have them too in our intestines, which help us digest our foods. When you eat yogurt that says it has live bacteria, well, that's to help us digest. So it's not a strange idea to have symbiotic bacteria. I think most animals do have them in the digestive system. Okay, the mole rat is also of interest because it's extremely long-lived for a rodent of its size, up to 28 years. Remember, this is a tiny little critter. He weighs a couple of grams and holds the record for the longest living rodent. The reason for their longevity is debated, but is thought to be related to the fact that they can substantially reduce their metabolism during hard times and so prevent oxidative damage to their cells. So you know that there's one theory that if humans don't eat as much and have a very, very light diet, they will live longer. They've done some tests of this, and some people are actually living that way. Very, very low calorie diet, and they hope to live longer than us folks who love pizza and other delicious foods, especially here in Alberta. Okay, so this has been summed up as they're living their life in pulses. That means at times they can slow down their metabolism to very low, and at times they don't do it. Because of their extraordinary longevity, an international effort was put into place to sequence the genome of the naked mole rat. They want to find out what they have in their genes that helps them live so long. Because if you put this in relation to the humans, and if they can live for 28 years and they only weigh a gram or two, I don't know how long we could live if we could manipulate our metabolism like they do. Okay, the other interesting thing about the mole rat is, and this is really, we may be using this in the future, naked mole rats appear to have a high resistance to cancer. Cancer has never been observed in them. The mechanism that stunts cancer is a gene called P16, known as a overcrowding gene, which prevents the creation of new cells once a group of cells reaches a certain size. Most mammals, including naked mole rats, have a gene called P27, which does a similar task, but prevents cellular reproduction at a much later point than P16 does. The combination of P16 genes and P27 and naked mole rat creates a double-layered barrier that prevents the formation of cancer cells. Now, that's an area of research that they're really checking out, because if we can find this gene and somehow use it to our advantage in gene therapy, we may be able to prevent the growth of tumors, which are cancers. So that's all I'm going to say about the naked mole rat today. But get a chance, go on to the gallery and take a look at this critter, and especially notice the teeth, which are outside of the mouth. So when he digs with them, he doesn't get soil into his mouth. So I'm going to pause to take another break, and remember that this is Heritage Radio Network, and the show is The Naturalist, and that's me. And my daughter, Erica, who does Why We Cook, is back from Vietnam, and she'll be on Tuesday, tomorrow, and I'm sure she's going to have some shows about her travels to Vietnam. So tune in tomorrow. I'll be back with the third segment in a minute, so stay tuned. Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, back for our last segment of this show. And we're going to talk about humans now. We were talking about mammals, the mole rat, but we're going to talk about our own species right now. And you know that one of my favorite topics, especially when my partner Carol Butler is here, and today she's not here because she's busy working with her editor on her new book that will be out soon. I think it's on hummingbirds, but we'll bring you the latest on that when Carol comes back. And she has a whole series of books. If you look on the photo gallery, you can see the covers of some of her books that we put on there in case you're interested. They're really done beautifully, and I think you would enjoy picking up one or two of them. So we have a little topic today that I'm going to talk about. And it starts out this way. Pornography studios might do well to take a tip from the Discovery Channel. According to a recent study, women are aroused by watching monkey sex. Now just think about that. They're more aroused by watching human sex, but the loving habits of the bonobos are enough to bring out the primate in any civilized lady. Now bonobos are really closely related to us. And they're really very loving creatures. They're very peaceable, and they're very loving. And maybe that's why women are attracted to them also. We don't know. The study conducted by Meredith Chivers of the Center for Addiction and Mental Health and Michael J. Bailey of Northwestern University was published in the October issue of Biological Psychology. The researchers found that while straight men are only aroused by females of the human variety, straight women are equally aroused by all human sexual activity, including lesbian, heterosexual, and homosexual male sex, and at least somewhat aroused by non-human sex. Each subject involved in the report watched 7 2-minute clips of sex, 6 scenes involving humans, and 1 of bonobos. The subject constantly monitored and noted his or her subjective arousal. The subjects were also affixed with a device that measured genital arousal, penis circumference for the men, and vaginal pulse amplitude for the women. All 18 men were heterosexual and all reported subjective arousal only during the scenes with women in those films that they watched. The objective data matched their reports. Okay, so the data from the instrument that measured the penis circumference and what they said matched. Images of our evolutionary ancestors do not make a man retrogress to Homo erectus. Homo erectus was one of the earlier forms of people. The 18 heterosexual women reported greatest subjective arousal during the heterosexual scene, but their bodies reported they were less naturally selective. Okay? So the women said, yeah, we're not getting aroused by those monkeys, but their bodies said that they were. Chivers said in a previous study, she had shown a very low correlation between women's stated sexual interest and their sexual arousal patterns in the lab. The correlation was much higher for men, she said. So the women, well, they were aroused physically. They didn't really want to say anything about it. There's a possibility that genital response for women is not necessarily imbued with meaning about her sexual interests, said Chivers. She also emphasized that her findings do not imply women harbor a latent desire for lesbian sex or bestiality. Bestiality is having sex with an animal. Well, the women did not report their arousal in the subjective part of the study. Chivers said women are generally receptive to her findings about their objective responses. That means their responses verbally and what they kept a record of. When I speak to women, there's sort of an intuitive, oh yeah, she says. And Barbara Bartlett, a psychiatry professor at Cornell, said she was not alarmed by the women's response to the non-human stimuli. I don't know why this has surprised everybody that women get aroused watching humans and animals, she said. Animals, because of the way they function in an uninhibited manner, can be very arousing to look at when they copulate. However, Bartok was surprised that the men did not have the same response as the women. I wonder if men weren't concerned about being labeled as homosexual or perverse by being interested in these things, and therefore their erections were inhibited, she said. Chivers hopes to discover what specific aspect of a visual stimulus causes women to become aroused. Some experts believe mentally labeling an act as sexual arouses women. Others, including Chivers, believes innately recognize sexual features, such as an erect penis, even out of their usual human context, stimulate women. She said she did not yet know how similar to humans an animal would need to be in order to elicit a sexual response from women. So this was an interesting little study where women watched these, I guess they were little movies, which included bonobos, which are these really, really beautiful chimpanzee-like animals. And they have sex constantly. It's a big activity, and they're not necessarily monogamous. Whenever the opportunity arises, they will have sex with each other. And it's like play. So the women, I guess, subconsciously became aroused with that. And what this report says is that this woman who did the study thinks that women are wired, hardwired, to become aroused at an erect penis, whether it's on a man or it's on an ape or a monkey or a bonobo. But they don't really know to what extent it would go. And so I wondered after reading this article, if you remember my show on barnacles and on the Crepidula fornicata, that snail that has to have a long penis to reach down into the next snail, whether women would be aroused by watching that behavior of a penis on a snail or on a barnacle. Probably not. I think that would be the outer limits of arousal. So that that topic is a topic for a lot more study. So I want to remind you today that this is the Heritage Radio Network. And if you want to call in with a comment, this show is live. And the number is 718-497-2128. And if you want any information about Heritage Radio Network, you can go online and go to info@heritageradionetwork.com. And I remind you that my daughter, Erica, is has come back from Vietnam and with a stop off in Korea. And in Vietnam, she is helping a school, a cooking school that has been going for a few months now, and she went back to help work on the curriculum. And our sponsor today is, let's get this right, Salumi Artisanal Cured Meats, which is a new sponsor. And I assume that they have a whole line of cured meats like salamis and I don't really know the name of the other cured meats. And just a point of information, I'm going to be away for 2 weeks, and I'll try to record some shows, so you'll have a new show every week. But I'm going to Puerto Rico for 2 weeks, and I'm going to visit a place in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. And Arecibo is the name of the world's largest radio telescope. And you may say, what's a radio telescope? Well, it's not an optical telescope. It's a telescope that records radio waves that are coming from other places in the solar system. So they have been in business for at least 20 years. And their project name is SETI, S-E-T-I, and it stands for Research in the Universe for Extraterrestrial Life. They've been looking for extraterrestrial signs from other places in our universe that may have intelligent life. So this is a huge facility in Puerto Rico, and we're going to make that one of our stops there. And my colleague, who you may remember the show with Michael Hamburg, who's my astronomy friend, He will be back in a couple of weeks to do a new show on astronomy. And my other colleague, Carol Butler, will be back in a couple of weeks. And we will continue our shows. And remember now that it's almost—it's the middle of almost not the middle of February yet, but it's February. And I remember I told you that spring starts when we still think it's the middle of the winter, but spring starts in the oceans just about now, when the days are getting longer and the light has increased in the oceans and the bays and the estuaries. The phytoplankton, which are way down at the bottom of the food chain, which are these single-celled plants, the phytoplankton start to reproduce. And they reproduce and reproduce, and they actually reach their height of reproduction somewhere in June. And they have to be around in huge swarms of these one-celled diatoms, which are phytoplankton, because they are almost at the bottom of the food chain. And the zooplankton, which are a little bit bigger than these plant plankton, they start reproducing and their population goes up. And why is this important to us? It's important to us because all the critters that we eat, all the seafood, depend upon these tiny little, almost microscopic critters. So spring has started in the oceans with the increase of population of phytoplankton. So don't be sad that it's still pretty cold out. But as we go into March and the weather gets a little bit better and better, and we get into April and May, then the fish and the crabs and the lobsters and all those other critters that we depend on for food, they start to reproduce. And by the time their eggs are hatched into tiny little copies of themselves or in their little plankton form, all these diatoms and plant plankton called phytoplankton and the plankton called zooplankton are available for these critters to eat. So just a little message to you about that spring is really here, even though we don't feel it on land. But in the seas, spring is happening right now. So I'm going to sign off the program today. And if you get a chance, go to the photo gallery and take a look at that naked mole rat. He's actually smiling in his photograph. So we'll see you again next week with another show. And this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, signing off for today.